Thank you, Mr. Guy. Well, brethren, who brought you here today? Who brought you here? How did you get here? You know, once upon a time, we embarked upon a journey. A journey that has no end. Think about that for a moment. We reflect on the fact that we're on a journey that has no end. The question I might ask us today is, how committed are we to the journey? How committed are we to the journey? You know, to commit means to pledge or assign some particular course, or an agreement or pledge to do something. We made that agreement, didn't we? We made a commitment to a journey. Some of us have done this from birth. Many of us have from birth. It's amazing sometimes when we think about how many second, third, sometimes fourth generation now Christians that we have. My wife, Beth, of course, has, you know, gone to more feasts than she's years old. She went to her first feast when she was 2 weeks old. Some of us, somewhere in our adult life, began this journey, didn't we? Somewhere in our adult life, sometimes later in life, we came to what we commonly call the knowledge of the truth. John 6:44, of course, says that no one can come to me unless the Father who draws him calls him. So at some point in time, whether from birth or whether God called us when we were adults, we had to agree, didn't we? We had to agree. You know, I came into the church with my parents starting when I was age 14. And for a period of time, it was mostly a social event for me. I can say that. For a period of time, it was mostly social. This is a wonderful social experience, isn't it? We have wonderful social experiences, don't we? We talked about the picnic. And we're a friendly and fun bunch. We visit here after services. It's noisy. We laugh. We have fun together. You know, we played basketball and softball, and we've had dances together, and we've been to each other's homes, and we've played cards together, and we've fried fish together, and we've picnicked together. We've done, you could fill in the blank, a lot of things together, haven't we? Very enjoyable experiences, good things to do together. But at the end of the day, we're not committed to a social club, are we? A commitment is not to a social club. It's a wonderful thing to do all these things together, but we are the ecclesia, aren't we? We are the church. We are called out ones, or as Mr. Johnson so ably taught us on the day of Pentecost, we're not just called out, but we're called together. Called together. Called for a special purpose. Called to a way of life. How committed are we to that way of life? How committed are we to that? Are we totally 100% committed to that? Matthew chapter 22. Matthew chapter 22 and verse 37. How committed are we to this journey that we're on? Matthew 22 and verse 37 says, Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind." Now, we don't use the word all. That's one of those definitive words, isn't it? all, never, always. We don't use those things lightly. But Christ here said that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind. Verse 38 says, this is the first and great commandment. The first and great commandment. We're to love the Lord our God with all our heart and all our soul and all of our mind. These personal interactions we have with one another, these friendships and bonds we have, the social events are very important. They're wonderful for us to have. They're a blessing for us to have. We wouldn't know each other to have them if it wasn't for our relationship with God first, would we? If it wasn't for our relationship with God first. So the verse 39 says, the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. We'll love one another, have those interactions. But the first and great commandment is for us to have a relationship with God. That's the first and great commandment. How committed are we to that relationship? How committed are we to that relationship? Let's consider today, in the time that we have left, let's consider our relationship with our God and our commitment to our relationship with our God. I've titled this message, Commitment and the First Commandment. Commitment and the First Commandment. Do I love the Lord my or our God? Do I do that? Do I do what Christ here instructed us to do? To love the Lord your God with all your heart. With all your heart. With all your soul. And with all your mind. Is God, in all points, first in our life? Is God in all points first in our lives? Mr. Myers, a few months ago in a sermon, mentioned to us, and he asked us a question, do we give God the best part of our day? I thought that was an interesting question and statement that he asked us. Do we give God the best part of our day? Or do we just, give him the leftover part of the day? Sometimes I'm sure that we've had days, I know I have, where, for whatever reason, sometimes God has gotten the leftover part of the day. When we have a minute here or a few minutes there, or in the evening, maybe before we go to bed because we haven't prayed that day. Do we make it a priority to give God the best part of our day, the first part of our day? We make that commitment and that priority. Establishing and developing and maintaining a personal relationship with our Creator, the living God, is the most important commitment we can ever make. The most important commitment. We make other commitments in our lives as well, but the most important commitment we make is to our Creator and to our God. The commitment to live in accordance with and with His laws, as we heard about in the first message. That's the most important commitment. Isaiah chapter 40 and verse 26. Isaiah 40 and verse 26 says, lift your eyes on high. We're to lift our eyes on high. We are to recognize God and what he does, and see who has created all these things. All these things. God has created everything that there is, hasn't he? He has created it. He's created all these things. Who brings out their host by number. He calls them by name, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power. Not one is missing. So God has created these things. So if we look around, you know, we had this beautiful picture that Mr. Bond has now taken down, but we had this beautiful picture, and I had asked him to as I gave the sermon, this beautiful picture that we had up there of a mountain that God created. The beauty that God created. You know, think of the most beautiful things physically that you can think of, things you enjoy looking at, things you might muse on and think about. God created them. God created them. So God created all of these beautiful things. Verse 28, have you not known, have you not heard? The everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth. The creator of the ends of the earth. God is the creator of the ends of the earth. Neither faints nor is weary. He's never off the job. God is never off the job. You know, John said, in John, Christ said, I work and my Father works. They're never off the job. They're always looking out for us. The creator of the ends of the earth neither faints nor is weary. There is no searching of his understanding. So God is the creator of the ends of the earth. 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. First Timothy 6 and verse 17. Says, command those who are rich in this present age not to be haughty, nor to trust in uncertain riches. So we do have a lot of blessings in our lives, don't we? We see haughty people. We see, you know, most wealthy people that we see on our televisions, read about in our newspapers or in magazines. Oftentimes can notice that there's a struggle with humility. Sometimes we may struggle with that as well. You know, we have struggles in that way. We're instructed here and commanded. That was the instruction given to us here, that there's a commandment here in Timothy. That we're not to be haughty or to trust in uncertain riches. Those things around us that are important for us to have, the physical blessings that God has given us. God is the creator of the ends of the earth. He has given us any wealth, any blessing, anything that we have. But we're to trust, it says, we're not to trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God who gives us richly all things to enjoy. God has given us many things richly to enjoy, hasn't he? He's given us many things to enjoy. But here he's referred to as the living God. Do we think of God as a living God? He's alive, that he's a living God. It's interesting, this reference to the living God in the Bible is used 30 times. 30 times that the word God is preceded by the living God. The living God. 30 times, it's 15 times in the Old Testament, 15 times in the New Testament. And in both the Greek And the Hebrew meaning, according to Greek and Hebrew lexicons, it means to live. That he lives, that he's alive and living, that he's a living God. The Hebrew lexicon, there is a reference to that he lives, or he who lives forever. And we talked about the fact that our journey has no end. You know, it's sometimes hard to fathom that God has no beginning, that he lives forever, that he's always lived and will always live. But do we think of God as being a living God, that he's alive and he's living? Matthew chapter 16, we'll look at a couple of scriptures here. I have a number of them, but I'll not go through all of them, all 30 of them, but I'll just cover a couple of them. Matthew chapter 16 and verse 13 through 17. Matthew 16 and verse 13 through 17. Matthew chapter 16 says, when Jesus came in the reach of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, whom do you say that I am? The Son of Man. Who do you say that I, the Son of Man, am? So they said, some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. He said to them, but who do you say I am? And Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. The Son of the living God. So here we see that Christ referred to God as the living God, that he's alive and that he lives, that he's a living God. Let's go to the Old Testament and look at a reference here in Deuteronomy chapter 5. We'll look at a reference to that Moses made, where he referred to the living God. Do we think of God? Do we think of him as a living God, that he's alive and that he lives, and that he's alive in our lives? Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 26. Deuteronomy chapter 5 and verse 26 says, for who is there of all flesh who has heard the voice of the living God speaking from the midst of the fire as we have? Now here we can see in verse 1 of chapter 5 that Moses called all Israel together. In verse 22 says, these words the Lord spoke to all your assembly in the mountain from the midst of the rock, from the midst of the fire, the cloud, and in the thick darkness with a loud voice. So God spoke here through Moses. And Moses referred to God in verse 26 as a living God. You might take out a lexicon or do a word study on the living God. It's fascinating and it's an interesting study. I'll just reference you a couple more scriptures in Psalm 42, verse 2, and 84, verse 2. Jeremiah 10:10, Daniel, King Darius referred to Daniel's God as the living God in Daniel chapter 6 and verse 20 and 26. Revelation chapter 7 and verse 2 refers to the living God. So God, the God that we love with all our heart and all our soul and all our mind, is a living God. He's alive and he lives. He's a living God. The God that we're committed to is a living God. God is referred to. With that background, let's turn to Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6 in verse 19. Matthew chapter 6 in verse 19. So we serve and we are committed to a living God. Matthew chapter 6. In verse 19, we're told, says, Christ said, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, So we serve and we're committed to a living God, and we're not to lay up for ourselves treasures on this earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. And that does happen, doesn't it? We go to great lengths, don't we? We go to great lengths to make sure that we protect our clothing in our closets, that moth and other types of insects perhaps don't get in there and destroy those things, rust, but they can be destroyed and corroded. A little moth can do a whole lot of damage to expensive clothing. You know, a little bit of rust can do a whole lot of damage to a lot of things. Can do a whole lot of damage to your car. Can do a whole lot of damage. A little bit of rust, as we heard in the sermon a few years ago, that a little bit of rust underneath a bridge can cause a bridge to collapse. Christ said we don't lay up for ourselves treasures on this earth where moth and rust destroy. Do we? Verse 24, drop down to verse 24, it says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve God and mammon. The margin there says riches. We can't serve God and our riches. We need to have a priority to serve God, don't we? That God comes and always is first and foremost in our lives, and that we are committed to Him first in our lives. We need to put God first. Let's turn to the book of Joshua, back to the book of Joshua, chapter 7. We can't serve God and riches. That we serve God, don't we? And those riches, the things that we have, the physical blessings that we have, are the result of God giving those things to us. We can't serve God and mammon or riches. We make sure that we serve God. Joshua chapter 7 and verse 12. Joshua chapter 7 and verse 12. Says, therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies. Now, as we go through this little example here, you know, if you go back and read through the first five books of the Bible, you know, it's amazing how many times God instructed and repeated His instructions to the children of Israel. Those things were regularly and consistently repeated in those books. And they were constantly warned, as Mr. Guy mentioned, about idolatry. They were constantly warned about that. And in Moses' dying message to the children of Israel, he warned them about these very things that began to happen. It says, therefore the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their backs before their enemies, because they have become doomed to destruction. Neither will I be with you anymore unless you destroy the accursed from among you. Destroy the accursed from among you. God consistently and continually warned the children of Israel about these things, about the accursed among you. Now, the accursed among you in the Hebrew means things which should have been utterly destroyed. What are those things in our lives? The accursed things that we should have put behind us and utterly destroyed from among us. Let's go back to read here in verse 1. We'll pick up the context a little bit and see why verse 12 happened. It says, but the children of Israel committed a trespass regarding the accursed things. They committed a trespass regarding these accursed things. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, of the tribe of Judah, took of the accursed things. So the anger of the Lord burned against Israel. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Beth-Aven on the east side of Bethel, and spoke to them, saying, Go up and spy out the country. So the men went up and spied out Ai. It's interesting what happened here. And they returned to Joshua and said, Do not let the people go up, but let about 200 or 300 men go up and attack Ai. Do not weary all the people there, for the people of Ai are few. So about 300 men went up from the people, but they fled before the men of Ai. And the men of Ai struck down about 36 men, for they chased them from before the gate as far as Shebarim, and struck them down on the descent. Therefore the hearts of the people melted and became like water. Now it's interesting here that this happened, that, you know, they kind of took God for granted here, didn't they? Because it says, then, verse 6, then Joshua tore his clothes, fell to the earth on his face before the ark of the Lord until evening, both he and the elders of all Israel, and they put dust on their heads. It's interesting here, this word then, isn't it? This word then. How many times have we done that? I know I have. I've done that at times. Many times I've noticed in when I've had failures or things didn't work out for me, it's because I do something, and then when I fail, I involve God. Instead of asking God for His help and His guidance before I do something, and then proceed with His help and His guidance. That's kind of what Joshua did here. He kind of left God out of the picture. The point there being, of course, is that as we go through our life and as we put God first and foremost in our lives, we have to ask God for His guidance in everything that we do. You know, Scripture says, I think in Timothy, that we should be instant in prayer, that we can involve God in every way and in every aspect of our lives, to be that committed to this journey that we make sure that God is guiding us in every aspect of our lives, not just go to Him in the then factor. When we have an issue or a problem, then we go to Him and ask Him to help us through it. So we have to make sure that we involve and that we're committed to God and committed 100% to this journey, and in all ways and in every aspect put God first and foremost in our lives. That we're committed 100% and in every way to this journey. Luke chapter 24. Luke chapter 24. Several other scriptures I could have taken you to. I'll give you the example. The examples of Acts chapter 4, verse 1 through 5. Just write that down in your scripture, in your notes there perhaps. Acts chapter 5, verse 1 through 5. And contrast that with Acts chapter 4, verse 32 through 37. The last five verses of chapter 4 of Acts. Contrast that with the first five verses of Acts chapter 5. Luke chapter 14. Christ here made a very strong statement to us in Luke chapter 14 in verse 25. This is a section of Scripture that we all read before we ever came, you know, before we ever were baptized. I'm sure that all of us were taken to this particular Scripture in our baptism counseling. Luke chapter 14 and verse 25 says, And great multitudes went with Him, and He turned and said to them, If anyone comes to Me... So, if we want to come to Christ, and if we want to come to God, and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brother and sisters, yes, his own life, He cannot be my disciple. Now, of course, we're not talking here about we don't hate other people. What this really means is that we love less by comparison. That God, in every way and in every aspect of our life, comes first. That we love less by comparison. Our families. And we love our families a whole lot, don't we? Our wife and children, our parents, brothers, sisters, our own life. Christ said, we have to put God before our own life. That God comes has that much of a priority in our life. Verse 27, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. We may have to suffer things. We may have to suffer undeserved things, just as Christ did. But we can't turn or draw back. We have to have that consistent and constant commitment, don't we? We have to have that consistent and constant commitment. Matthew chapter 6, back a couple of chapters to the book of Matthew. Again, chapter 6. We read through this earlier, but we skipped a particular verse for a purpose. Matthew chapter 6. We read verses 19 and verse 21, or 19, verse 19 says, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. Verse 21 says, very simply, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Where the important things in our life is, that's where our heart's going to be. Question we might ask ourselves is, where is our treasure? Where is our commitment? You know, do we lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven? Do we lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven? We have a list of three to-do things that we can do with regard to that in the book of Matthew chapter 6. We can look at verses 1 through 4. I won't read those for time's sake. But number one, you know, one way that we would lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven is to have a pure motive. Have a pure motive, number one. So we lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven by having a pure motive. Number two, verse 5 and 6, is to pray. Pray. Have that constant communication with God. You know, be instant in prayer, always in prayer. So number two would be to pray. Number three, and how we would lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven, would be verse 16 and through 18, is to fast. Fast. Make a commitment, brethren, to do these things. Make a commitment to have a pure motive and to pray and to fast. Need to do that, brethren, to have a pure motive to pray and to fast and to lay up for ourselves treasure in heaven. Let's go back to the opening question that we had. The opening question was, who brought you here today? Who brought you here today? How did you get to be here? Let's go back to the book of Exodus, chapter 20. Exodus, chapter 20, in verse 2. Very simple, short verse here that tells us how we got here. How we got here. Exodus, chapter 20, in verse 2 says, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. It is God that brought us here, that brought us together, that called us together. Verse 3 says, you shall have no other gods before me. Let's make a commitment to put God first in each and every aspect of our life.